This is the Truth Hurts program with Steve Z.
It's Friday.
Hooray, it's Friday. Today is Friday.
Friday.
Get a clue, Steve.
Hello.
Shut the f*** up, Steve!
I hate your voice. I hate you. I just want to do my work. Shut up! Oh my God, I don't care!
I'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?
Because it's Friday.
Friday.
Attention, Amazonian Primal delivery customers. We've been receiving lots of feedback on the massive delays in you receiving your packages, but it's not our fault. Thanks to the so-called green initiatives by your federal government, we've been forced to make some changes to our delivery systems. In addition to wind and solar-powered warehouses that only get electricity if the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, the new Amazonian Primal all-electric 18-wheel delivery trucks are now on the road. Yes, they weigh a whole lot more than normal diesel-powered trucks, so they have to carry much fewer of your packages. Yes, we have to put many more trucks on the road to make up for the losses in carrying capacity. Yeah, this means more traffic on the roads and more potential accidents for our overworked, very sleepy drivers. But don't worry, there's lots of maple sugar glazed donuts to keep those guys popping. These trucks do cost much more than diesels, so we're raising prices for deliveries to cover the difference. And yes, these heavier trucks wear out those 18 tires much sooner, which causes more tires to end up in landfills or in empty lots in minority neighborhoods. And yes, they don't go very far on a single charge, so your packages will be delayed more often than not. But that's what President Biden wants, so that's what you have to deal with. Amazonian Primal, doing what we're told to do by the regime so they don't regulate us out of business.
Well, we have made it once again to Friday, the 26th day of April, 2024, and this is the Truth Hurts program. Joe Biden is repeating the same old lies over and over again, hoping that if he says it enough, stupid people will believe him. And he repeated a lie that he's told many, many times in the past about having driven 18-wheel tractor trailers. He did so at a speech in Florida this past Tuesday. At 81, the oldest, most senile president in American history, Biden has remained a gaffe machine throughout his entire joke of a presidency, often retelling lies about his past, his so-called biography, that have been repeatedly debunked even by mainstream leftist, progressive, woke, liberal news outlets. At Hillsborough Community College in Tampa Bay on Tuesday, not to be confused with Hillsborough College, the conservative free-thinking university, Biden claims to have driven a big rig. He said, quote, "I used to drive an 18-wheeler." He said this as he attempted to discuss how he has negotiated pensions for labor unions. He hasn't negotiated anything. His picture gets put out there. He gets to shake people's hands, but he is no negotiator. Biden was even called out by CNN, along with conservative media outlets, for the lie, but it's not the first time that President Joe Biden has made this wacky claim. In 2021, he was caught off camera by a local news channel's microphone during a visit to the Mack truck facility in Pennsylvania, where he made the claim that he had driven such 18-wheel trucks before. He said, quote, "I just drive an 18-wheeler, man." He was heard saying on Wednesday in a video later posted to Twitter, "I got to. Large trucks as the one Biden gave a speech in front of during the visit to the facility require a special license to drive, and there is zero evidence that Joe Biden has such a license, ever had such a license, or has even driven an 18-wheel truck." He was heard claiming that he used to drive an 18-wheeler. Zach Parkinson is the Republican National Committee spokesperson, and he wrote, "There is zero evidence that Biden used to drive an 18-wheeler." This man is also the RNC research director, and he posted, "The extent of Biden's trucking experience is that he rode in a truck once for one night in 1973, but he made sure to return home by airplane. That lie began way back in 1973 when Biden wrote an opinion editorial piece for a newspaper while he was a Democrat Party senator. He recalled at that time taking a 536-mile ride from his home state of Delaware in what he called a 47,000-pound cargo truck. He wrote at the time, quote, I made a trip because I wanted first-hand account of truckers who say carry 50% of all the goods shipped within the United States. They make case worth listening to. In a news story about Biden's alleged journey, it is noted that he made the return trip back to Washington, D.C. by airplane. His latest gaffe and those other gaffes weren't even the first of the Tuesday gaffes of this past week. The president suffered another gaffe during a speaking event as he tried to paint his opponent, former President Donald Trump, as somehow being untrustworthy. Biden called out Trump, his general election 2024 opponent, as the sole person responsible for what Biden calls the cruelty and chaos that's occurred after the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Funny, Roe v. Wade got overturned on your watch, Mr. Biden, and Donald Trump was not even in office. However, when Biden made the lie, he said, quote, how many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted? Unquote. Yeah, how many times does Mr. Trump have to prove that you and the Democrats can't be trusted, Mr. Biden? Of course, ABC News tried to cover up for the president. They replaced the word we with he when they described the speech, though he clearly was heard saying we can't be trusted. It's about the most honest thing Joe has said recently. We, the Democrat political party, cannot be trusted. And this, Biden is correct. In 2024 alone, Biden has made multiple mistakes, publicly forgetting the name of the Russian dissident Alexei Navalny's widow, forgetting a German chancellor he had spoken to had died in 2017. I guess he speaks to dead people still. And of course, he confused the leaders of Egypt and Mexico, not to mention the shocking matter of the transcript of his testimony to former special counsel Robert Hur. His appointed special counsel by attorney Merrick Garland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, that is, in January 22, assigned to investigate the president's mishandling of classified files on a range of areas, including Afghanistan. According to the transcript of that two-day interview, obtained by the DailyMail.com ahead of Hur's highly anticipated congressional testimony, Biden brought up the subject of his late son Beau's death in the context of a book he wrote and published in 2017. What month did Beau die? Biden asked himself during the multiple-hour sit-down interview on October 8th of 2022. Oh God, he said, May 30th? He seemingly responded, but the president had to be reminded about the year in which his oldest son died because Biden was incapable of remembering. A White House attorney then stepped in to state that the year of Beau Biden's death was 2015. And then Biden questioned out loud, was it 2015 he died? Trust me, my friends, I lost a son. I know the day, the hour, the month, the year. And I will never forget that, unless, of course, I suffer from Alzheimer's, dementia, senility, or I have some sort of massive stroke. The president then went on to ask, when was Donald Trump elected? He said, was Donald Trump elected in 2017? To which another White House attorney jumped in to correct him, saying it was 2016. Poor old guy can't remember when his opponent took office. Can't remember when his own son died. Biden shouldn't be the president, my friends. He should not have been the president, and he certainly should not be running for re-election. Biden belongs in a memory care facility for senile dementia and Alzheimer's patients because that is what he is. But the mix-up of Beau Biden's death date during the interview contradicts Biden's fiery denial that it even occurred. Hours after Mr. Hur put out the scathing report on February 9th, Biden engaged in a furious tirade from the White House saying, quote, I know what the hell I'm doing. I insist my memory's fine. And similarly, several times he erroneously said in speeches that his son Beau died in battle in Iraq or in Afghanistan. He said, quote, my son was a major in the U.S. Army. We lost him in Iraq. he told the troops on Thursday at Iwakuni. Beau Biden, who served as Delaware's Attorney General and served in the Delaware Army National Guard during the Iraq War, died at age 46, long after having been out of the military. In the year 2015, he died of brain cancer at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Nowhere near Iraq, nowhere near Iran, nowhere near Afghanistan, and certainly not in war. It was the third time that the oldest living president in the United States, who's gearing up to run for a second term, spoke misleadingly about his oldest son's death in public. He's faced criticism for embellishing his past with claims involving him claiming to be involved in the civil rights movement, working in coal mines, and all the other lies he comes up with. For you history buffs, you might recall in 1988, Joe Biden was running for president for the Democratic presidential nomination, and that whole entire campaign came unraveled over claims that he lied on biographical details for years, including lies about his academic record, how many degrees he had, and where he finished in relation to the top of the class. But now, the misremembering clearly affects how the voters view his ability to possibly effectively serve a second term. Poll after poll after poll has shown Americans are more worried about Biden's age than they are about Trump's, because age is not just a number. You've seen the difference. Biden having to be led around like a little puppy on a leash, getting lost on his way to the only podium on a stage, can't find his way off a stage, shakes hands with thin air, walks past the people he's supposed to shake hands with, can't read the teleprompter, can't put together two coherent sentences, and actually reads the stage directions out loud as if they're part of the speech. At this point, anyone who is supporting Biden is obviously doing so for a subversive purpose. You need only listen to the stark differences in the way Trump speaks with alacrity and authority when compared to Biden's mumbling, lying, fumbling, stuttering, stammering, and his inability to read with any conviction whatsoever. Only 38% of likely voters in 2024 believe Biden will even be alive at the end of another four-year term, according to an exclusive poll done by the DailyMail.com in April. And this means one thing. Vice President Kamala Toe Harris is as likely to be in the top job as Biden come January of 2029 if he wins re-election. 36% of likely voters believe Harris will be president at the end of the next term should Biden win re-election. The same proportion thinks Biden will still be alive. The rest of us know better. The results of this shows how Joe Biden's age and mental failings will be a major factor on November 5th when voters pick the next commander-in-chief that they want to run the country for the next 4 years. Donald Trump is only 4 years younger, but few voters harbor any doubts. More than half say they're confident he could make it through a full term. 34% say they have some doubts, but either way, the results show that Republicans and Democrats will have to weigh up not their own choice of president, but who will be likely to step in if health or worse incapacitates the leader of the free world. And you know, the Democrats need others to repeat those lies, because the more you hear them, the more you're likely to start to accept them, and maybe even believe them. They need others to repeat the lies to tell the tale of how wonderful Biden supposedly is. You remember when buckwheat, French dip, the quota-hire lesbian black girl, Karine Jean-Pierre, who only got her job because she checked off three diversity boxes on Biden's wish list, said over and over that Joe is more active and it's hard for any of us here at the White House to even keep up with him. Those are the kind of lies that they tell, and they have to keep saying it to try and convince us. The corrupt crop of crap at CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, and CBS, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and all these other liberal media outlets are quick to jump on the bandwagon. If Donald Trump blinks twice, they say he's having a seizure. Joe Biden can fall up a flight of stairs, grope a little girl's non-boob, and not be able to read two sentences on a teleprompter, and they say he's just fine. Speaking of that current crop of crap at CNN, they still have not managed to revive their liberal, progressive, woke network's pitiful ratings. So the newest management team at the beleaguered network have decided to bring back many of the people that they recently fired, as if that will revive the downward spiral. Hint, it won't. CNN's biggest liberal stars who were pushed out under previous leadership have been making their return to the air in the recent weeks, marking another shift away from a mission to make the network supposedly less partisan. Nope, They're becoming more and more partisan by the day. It's been about a year since CNN's parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery, canned the network's beleaguered CEO, Chris Licht, who was brought on to restore journalistic credibility that CNN had obviously lost during the Trump era. It hasn't worked. Among the changes that Mr. Licht made were of personnel, particularly getting rid of some of the most anti-Trump voices who helped redefine CNN as a news organization aligned with MSNBC, which openly embraces its far-left stance. Three of those have managed to crawl their way back through the gutter and make their way back to the airwaves of CNN. Jeffrey Toobin, who was CNN's chief legal analyst, decided to exit CNN after 20 years in August of 2022. It is widely believed he was forced out by the Licht regime. Toobin is best known for being caught masturbating during a Zoom meeting with his New Yorker colleagues in October of 2020 on camera. At the time, he was fired from the New Yorker, but he was only granted a leave of absence by CNN and was welcomed back with open arms as long as he wore gloves or used sanitizer under the predecessor for Mr. Licht, Jeff Zucker. Toobin has made a remarkable resurgence in recent weeks, making at least 20 appearances on CNN, most of them to discuss Trump's so-called hush money trial. And he is now introduced as a former federal prosecutor. He's just another sleazy masturbating on camera lawyer carrying water for Joe Biden. Remember the black gay guy Don Lemon, another longtime CNN person? He got canned in April following tumultuous months that included losing his solo primetime show, offset drama on his new morning show, and his controversial past her prime comments about Nikki Haley. But last month, gay Don Lemon reappeared on CNN to speak out about his quashed deal with X and Elon Musk. In a recent interview, Lemon said he has left the door open about officially returning full-time to CNN. He said, quote,
"Look, I would never say never. Most of the people who were involved in my ousting are gone. And so it's kind of the place that it was, you know, before I got there. So that will be interesting."
Go ahead. Brian Stetler was CNN's former chief media correspondent. He got canned in August of 2022 after Mr. Licht decided to cancel the network's long-running media-centric Sunday show called Reliable Sources, which Stetler hosted since 2013. You might recall I've mentioned that program called Unreliable Sources many times. But Stetler, who made a handful of appearances on CNN late last year during a book tour, has reappeared a couple of times this week during Tuesday's coverage of the Donald Trump trial, and he was introduced as a, quote, special correspondent for Vanity Fair, unquote. He was asked on X whether he was back on CNN permanently, and he says, no, I'm just visiting. Sources familiar with Toobin, Lemon, and Stetler's recent appearances tell Fox News they were simply guests and that there are no current discussions about bringing them in to an official return to the network. While the three ex-CNNers may not be on the network's payroll, their return to the network airwaves remains a signal of strong rebuke from the current CNN staff against all the decisions made by the guy that tried to turn CNN back into a credible news agency. Slowly introducing the water carriers to see how the ratings might move is the main goal. Licht, if you recall, was handpicked by David Zaslav, the Warner Brothers Discovery chief, to course-correct CNN, which continues to lose viewers and has been tainted by the moniker of being a liberal, anti-Trump network. During the one-year tenure at the head of CNN, Licht struggled to earn the trust of the rank and file, so they got rid of him. Oh, and by the way, in addition to rolling out the red carpet for CNN staffers that Licht had fired, programming decisions also have to be reversed. CNN This Morning's effort to revitalize the Zucker era's flagship morning show, New Day, was essentially scrapped earlier this year. CNN's primetime experiment called King Charles, starring former CBS Morning News host Gayle King and former NBA superstar turned sports analyst, the highly biased Charles Barkley, ended their limited run this month following a dismal viewership. So nobody believes the lies of CNN anymore. Anyway, enough about that. I am really bored with this whole CNN story. So moving on. You know what the new name for homelessness and living in your car is called now? In the state of Montana, it's called urban camping. There's an article here online. Urban camping in this Montana city has spiked 200% as priced-out locals are forced to move into cars and RVs. So-called urban camping, when people live in their car or RV parked on a city street, is rising rapidly in Bozeman, Montana, where the locals are simply getting priced out by Bidenflation, Bidenomics, rising housing costs, and of course those uber high interest rates caused by Biden's mishandling of our economy. The proper term is not urban camping, it's Bidenomics-induced homelessness. Bozeman, Montana is located in the Rocky Mountains, about 80 miles north of Yellowstone National Park. It's a city of about 56,000 people, not that big, but officials in the city say the number of Bozeman residents living in their RVs or in their cars has spiked by 200% in the last couple of years, according to Montana Public Broadcasting Service. They cited the city, since 2000, has seen the unhoused, you know, homeless, population grow by 50%. Again, the term urban camping is Biden-induced homelessness, and the local leaders seem to agree. The rise in residents experiencing homelessness came as housing costs have spiked, interest rates have risen beyond reach. The median price for a home in Bozeman has gone from $669,000 in 2020 to $1.2 million this year. Rental costs in Gallatin County, where Bozeman is located, increased nearly 19% from the time Donald Trump was the president to 2022, and they continue to rise. Bozeman Mayor Terry Cunningham told the PBS affiliate, "Homelessness has always been on the radar. Thus, with urban camping, RVs, more cars, this is a recent phenomenon." And though homelessness in the city has been rising since Joe Biden took office, the increase in campers and RVs on the streets makes the problem much more visible, resulting in tensions on how to address it. The city website says, when discussing how it's addressing urban camping, quote, "First, these folks are our residents too. Many contribute to the workforce, send their kids to our local schools, and may not appear homeless when you see them at their jobs and in the area." Well, that doesn't address the problem. That just points out the facts. Bozeman residents are divided over whether the city has been too lenient on addressing the issue. In some locations, the city's even installed dumpsters and trash cans near the areas where campers are camping to prevent litter and provide the homeless with a place to dispose of their garbage. A group of local business owners is suing Bozeman City, arguing the city was not doing enough to enforce the laws that would prevent people from camping on public streets. Business owners claim they're having to deal with theft and vandalism and instances of harassment. I wonder, are the businesses worried about the throngs of illegal, criminal, law-breaking, invading, trespassing immigrants? Probably not. Residents have complained that people living in their cars are not doing so out of necessity, but just so they can save a few bucks on rent, pointing to the presence of new cars and even generators at some of the campers. Listen, it's real easy to continue to pay your car note of $500 and buy a $300 generator at the Harbor Freight than it is to pay a $3,100 a month house note. Mayor Cunningham of Bozeman said that part of the issue is that the city cannot easily determine why the people are living in their RVs and cars. People are not required by law to disclose that information. In November, the city implemented an ordinance aimed at limiting urban camping. It prohibits camping at the same location for more than 30 days without getting an extension, and prohibits camping in front of certain places like schools, churches, and businesses. The result is, in my opinion, and in their opinion, musical chairs. People living in their campers told the Daily Chronicle that the city has hired three people to enforce an ordinance to make sure that they move every 30 days. Stephen Ankeny lives in an RV with his family, and he said, quote, "They're making it harder to be homeless. It's already hard enough. I understand they don't want us on the street, but it's going to happen until they get livable places or affordable houses for us or places we can live. I've got an idea. Why don't you move somewhere where you don't need to have a $1.2 million house? You've got an RV, you've got a car, you obviously have a skill set if you're employed. There are plenty of cities in lesser expensive places that you could move to." The city claims they're bringing more affordable housing to Bozeman, and they're working with a nonprofit organization to build a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week shelter. My question is, how's that Bidenomics working out for you there in Montana? But don't worry, Joe Biden thinks he has an answer. The Biden administration is proposing a 44.6% national wealth tax. That's right. Don't you dare be successful. Don't you mortgage your house and put your kids in public school so you can start a business that might hopefully one day make you wealthy. They're going to take as much as they can. The Biden administration's latest proposal is sending shockwaves through financial markets and sparking heated debates across the country. With talks of implementing a staggering 44.6% national wealth tax, investors and homeowners alike are bracing themselves for seismic shifts in their tax liabilities. Yep, don't you dare become successful. Don't you dare buy a nice house that might appreciate in value. Don't you dare inherit something from grandma. Don't become marginally wealthy. Biden wants to take away that money and success to do as Mr. Barack Hussein Obama wanted to do, spread the wealth around. You haven't heard that too much lately, but that's what Biden wants. He wants to take money away. He wants to remove success so that he can show the so-called poor that he's beating the rich down to the ground. To hell with the American dream. To hell with hard work, accomplishment, achievement, success. One of the most significant aspects of this proposed wealth tax is the impact on capital gains. Under this new Biden plan, all gains would be subject to a federal tax rate of 44.6%. But for residents of California, for example, the burden will be even higher, with an effective tax rate, thanks to state wealth taxes, of 59% on every dollar you gain. Bought a new house in 1990 for $500,000, and now it's worth $3 million? Biden's plan is to take away $1,115,000 out of your profit if your house is anywhere but California or New York. And in California, he's going to take just shy of $1.5 million. And where will the money go? Well, to his money laundering operation in Ukraine, to the Hamas terrorists in Palestine, or to give debit cards, cell phones, airplane rides, new tennis shoes, and hotels, and fancy meals for illegal, criminal, law-breaking, trespassing immigrants. The looming prospect of such high tax rates will probably trigger a rush to sell off assets before the policy can take effect. And the mass exodus from the stock market and into people just socking away their money could lead to significant market volatility, particularly in real estate and in stock markets. And of course, Biden's latest scheme will most certainly accelerate existing trends of global mobility amongst businesses and higher net worth individuals. Facing the exorbitant tax burden, many will seek refuge in other countries with more favorable tax programs. And this trend will definitely lead to a loss of capital, investment opportunities, talent, and growth in the United States. Proponents of this ridiculous tax argue it could help reduce income inequality and generate much-needed revenue for social programs. Critics, of course, raise concerns about the potential negative impact on investment, entrepreneurship, and economic growth, and will run many of the wealthier corporations completely out of the country. This new tax shows that Biden is indeed a puppet of the Obama regime, clearly showing the role of taxation as a way to redistribute wealth to people who don't contribute. And the balance between distribution of wealth and economic incentives and the long-term implications for individual prosperity and natural national competitiveness is obvious on its face. The fate of the proposed wealth tax remains uncertain, but the bottom line is they're coming for your money. And I'm coming to the end of this edition of the Truth Hurts program. Go out there and make it a great day. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you next time.
Well, howdy there, friends. This here's the Colonel. Y'all know which Colonel, but I can't mention my name still on account of I don't want to get sued. Anywho, by now I know you've heard about our newest product, the Cheetza, my award-winning chicken, drowned in some sort of pizza sauce. Hell, I didn't like it, but with pizza joints laying off so many folks and closing up their shops, the egghead accountants at our home office said we ought to give it a try. Since my hands are basically tied, I said what the hell. Anyway, I do want to apologize about raising the prices on our former dollar menu up to $7, but that's what Bidenomics inflation causes. And for my friends on the left coast in California, I have to apologize for the massive price increases due to the governor's ridiculous $20 an hour minimum wage. If you see the price of a leg and thigh rise as high as your car note, that's not the colonel's doing. But don't you worry, soon the robot batterers and frying machines will be in place, and the self-checkout and ordering systems will be too. So you won't have to worry about dealing with rude, unskilled workers accosting you at the counter. And if things don't get better soon, we'll have to cut our 11 spices and herbs down to simple salt and pepper. And no, I'm not talking about the big booty black girl singing room. This here's the Colonel saying, shoop, and bye-bye for now.
Stay locked in. Locked in. And turn it up.
Steve C. and the Truth Hurts Program.
Thank you for listening to the Truth Hurts program. Opinions expressed are protected free speech under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We apologize if you are offended, but we retract nothing. Background music by Jason Shaw and Audionautix. Copyright 2024, the Truth Hurts Program Network, all rights reserved.